Let's imagine you are on a bridge that crosses the Seine. By accident, you fall into the water and you're about to drown. A passerby witnesses the scene. He dives and saves your life. And then, once you're safe and sound, this individual simply asks you, "Is everything okay? How do you feel?" You barely have time to say, "Luckily you were there. Thank you." You would like to talk to him a little more, but you're still under shock. You don't know what to say, and the stranger leaves. Which question would you have liked to ask him? Maybe this one, "What is your name?" Or even this question, "Who are you?" But you wouldn't ask him these questions because they would be somewhat inappropriate in such circumstances. Who could it be if not the one who just saved your life? It doesn't matter what his name is, and it doesn't matter if he's a baker, a postman, a taxi driver, or even an undercover police officer. Everything you could learn about him is insignificant, since he has just shown you, in action, who he really is. So that's it. He saved you and went his own way. You will probably never see him again. You will never know what his name is or what he does for a living. You will never know if he has the same political ideas as you, or if he has ideas that you abhor. You will never know if, under different circumstances, this anonymous person would have been someone you would have liked or hated. This stranger, to whom you owe your life, is the one that Georges Brassens calls the Auvergnat, passerby, in one of his most famous songs. "The passerby who without ceremony gave me 4 pieces of wood when in my life it was cold, or the hostess who gave me 4 pieces of bread when I was hungry, or even the stranger who," sings Brassens, "with an unhappy eye smiled at me when the cops took me away." A passerby, a hostess, a foreigner, we will know no more. We will never know their name, and what we will keep engraved in our memory is not what their name is or who they are, but what they did, which they did spontaneously, without thinking about it. The heart of Georges Brassens' philosophy is there, in this vibrant praise of the anonymous. The anonymous, the opposite of the hero. The hero is the one to whom we pay homage, the one for whom a national funeral is organized, the one to whom the grateful nation opens its pantheon. The anonymous is quite the opposite. He's a little guy for whom doing good is not a heroic act, but a normal act, an act that goes without saying. In a famous phrase, Hannah Arendt spoke of the banality of evil. On the contrary, Georges Brassens sings to him of something much more important, the banality of good. We have all one day been helped, comforted, or even saved by someone about whom we knew nothing. Someone who may have risked their life for us, or who spoke a comforting word to us, or even just smiled at us when we needed it most. This someone is the exception, the one who stands out from the crowd, the one who does not do like the others, the one who dies when the others are watching, the one who sympathizes when the others turn their head. Facing the passerby, facing the hostess, facing the stranger, always stand the good people, all the well-meaning people who rejoice in the misfortune of others. And perhaps it is better not to know who the passerby is, who the hostess is, who the foreigner is. Giving them a name would risk attenuating what is most precious to them, and what is most precious to them, unlike others, is not their identity. Now let's change our point of view. We have placed ourselves on the side of the victim, on the one who is cold or hungry, on the one whom the police arrest. Let us now place ourselves on the side of the one who saves. What happens in the head and heart of the person who helps or saves the other? Parcent responds in another famous song called La Mauvaise Reputation, The Bad Reputation. We all know the story of this song. In a village, the population is wary of a quiet nonconformist who simply refuses to attend the national holiday of July 14th, or he lets the apple thieves get away. Everyone slanders him except the mute. Everyone points at him except the armless. And finally, everyone would like to see him hanged except the blind, of course. But what is most telling about the song is the way the narrator described himself. However, I'm not harming anyone by following my little guy's path. A little guy is by definition the complete opposite of a hero. So the anonymous person, the one who saves someone, is the opposite of the hero. It's an ordinary man. A little guy who does what everyone should do except that the others don't do it. And not only does what the others don't do, but they also hate him for doing what he does. And they hate him to the point of making him their scapegoat. They make fun of him, they slander him, they give him a bad reputation, and finally, they would like to lynch him until they see him hanged. Who are they? But quite simply, the good people. The good people who don't like the others follow a different path. This little guy is the same one who was the passerby in the other song. The one who gave 4 pieces of wood, or the hostess who gave 4 pieces of bread, or the stranger who didn't applaud when the police arrested the vagrant. If we bring together these two songs, La Chanson pour la Vernat and La Mauvaise Reputation, everything happens as if the one who brings help was similar to the one who is helped. So I think we need to focus on this idea because it gives an opportunity for reflection. As the conformist is in solidarity with the conformist, the nonconformist is in solidarity with the nonconformist. We can clearly see here the way in which Georges Brassens conceives social relations is far from peaceful. In his vision of things, there are two types of irreconcilable people who clash. Karl Marx said that the driving force of history was the class struggle, the struggle between the oppressors and the oppressed. For Georges Brassens, who was not a communist but an anarchist, things are a little more original. There are indeed two clans confronting each other, and all of human history is perhaps only the story of their confrontation. But these two clans are not the oppressors and the oppressed. They are the conformists and the nonconformists. Except that if the conformists do indeed form a clan, which is also how we recognize them, the nonconformists, by definition, do not form a clan. Otherwise, they would also become conformists. The type of relationship that binds conformists together is blind obedience, of course, while the type of relationship that unites nonconformists is friendship. We'll come back to that. But first of all, how do you recognize a conformist? The answer seems quite simple. The conformist is the one who accepts the way of thinking and acting of the majority. To be conformist is not to take the freedom to act in a way different from that which is expected of us. And this classic definition of the conformist is rather true. For Georges Brassens, a conformist is recognized above all by his obsession with identity. The conformist is the one who is not self-sufficient, the one who has a vital need to belong to a group, regardless of whether this group is a nation, a people, an ethnic group, or a religion. In addition, in order to feel he's personally valuable, the conformist needs to believe that the group to which he belongs is a superior group to the others, that the lives of those in one's group are worth more than the lives of those in the opposite group. And that is why conformists are often so proud of their roots. In his song, La Ballade de Jean qui sont nés quelque part, The Ballad of Those Who Were Born Somewhere, Georges Brassens fiercely mocks all those who base their identity not on their own value, but on the place of their birth, on their roots or their community belonging. Whether it comes from Paris or Rome or Sète or Zanzibar or wherever. Happy fools who were born somewhere. The song ends with these implacable verses. When the bell rings on the precarious happiness against the foreigners or more or less barbarians, they come out of the hole to die in the war, the happy imbeciles who were born somewhere. Yes, but wasn't Georges Brassens himself attached to his roots, to his place of birth, the city of Sète? Did he not write a magnificent song to be buried on the beach of Sète? When my soul takes its flight to the horizon, may my body be brought back to my native land in a sleeping place at the Paris Méditerranée terminus at Sète station, right by the sea, a stone's throw from the blue waves. Dig a little soft hole if possible along this beach where the sand is so fine on the Corniche beach. Listening to this song, we could say that Georges Brassens also claims an attachment to his native soil, to his origins, to his land. Well, no. The plea to be buried on the beach of Sète is a song with two meanings. You cannot be buried on a beach. A beach is not dry land in which you can bury a coffin. It is a moving and powdery soil in which we cannot take root, which clearly shows that even when we finally find these roots, they are fragile, like the words written on the sand and erased by the waves. And the end of the song confirms what we were saying about the difference between the hero and the anonymous little guy. Poor Pharaoh King, poor Napoleon, poor great men who lie in the Pantheon. You will envy the eternal summer visitor who pedals on the wave while dreaming, who spends his death on vacation. Let us now return to what we said earlier. For Georges Brassens, the opposite of conformism is friendship. True friendship is the bond that unites two nonconformist people who recognize each other as friends because they recognize each other not as identical, but as different. Many of Georges Brassens' songs celebrate friendship, but unfortunately, the best known is Les Copains d'abord, Friends First. Why, unfortunately? Because this song seems to praise everything that Brassens hates, everything that Brassens denounces. Male camaraderie, life in a group, placing the group above everyone else, etc. Friends First is Brassens' most paradoxical song, the one that resembles him the least, and for a good reason. Many people are unaware that this song is the only one that Brassens wrote on order. He didn't even choose the title. He wrote it to serve as the soundtrack to a film directed by Yves Robert, and which was aptly titled The Friends. It is enough to open a biography of Brassens to see how difficult it was for him to do this job, how much difficulty he had in writing the lyrics and even recording the song in the studio, multiplying the failures, he who usually didn't need many takes. Friends First is therefore not, contrary to what is often said, a hymn to friendship. It is rather a hymn to life in groups, these life in groups whose stupidity presents the nouns throughout this work. For example, in La Mauvaise Herbe, the Bad Grass, Georges Brassens sings, "Men are made, we are told, to live in flocks like sheep. I live alone, it is not tomorrow that I will follow the right path." And we could cite many other examples, but the most explicit of all is in the song Le Pluriel, where we find, "The plural is worth nothing to man, and if there are more than four of us, we are a bunch of idiots." As if by chance, Georges Brassens wrote this lyric just after recording Friends First, as if he wanted to deny this song which bore so little resemblance to him. Friendship for Brassens is not group life. Friendship is experience as a couple, or even better, friendship is this wonderful bond that brings together two solitary people. But is a relationship that exists between two loners who separate from the group still friendship? Isn't love already? Precisely for Brassens, friendship could be defined as chaste love. In friendship, as in love, it is not only a question of loving someone, but of preferring someone. The time has therefore come to talk about love in Brassens. Brassens often sings about love as a feeling which is first and foremost the fruit of carefreeness, which he expresses with great tenderness in his song dedicated to youthful loves, Les Amours d'Antan, Once Upon the Time, My Lovers. Because at 20, the heart is where the eye rests. The first cart that comes along impresses you. The humblest shepherdess is a king's catch. In spring, all wood is good for Cupid. We meet the girl at the flea market on Sunday. I like you, you like me, and that's it. And the big feelings were not necessary. We were not even required to bring our hearts. Sometimes no one came at the second meeting. The little Amazon had failed us. But we didn't run and hang ourselves for that. This carefreeness seems to be the only path that can lead to true love. Carefreeness first, passion then, and not the other way around, Brassens tells us. This goes against the idea we commonly have of love. Usually we meet someone with whom we fall in love, a relationship follows which lasts for a while, and then this relationship ends up wearing out the feelings we felt at the beginning until we separate. That's our ordinary way of conceiving love. Feeling first, then the relationship. For Brassens, things often happen the other way around. The relationship first, the feelings then. The relationship begins in carefreeness. The carefreeness experienced by the famous lovers who kiss on public benches. We meet someone, we flirt for fun, we form a relationship which is not serious, in any case which is not passionate, and it is only once the relationship is established, and even established for a long time, that we end up falling in love. Let's dare to say like this: true love only happens when you are not too demanding in love. The song in which Brassens best expressed his feeling of carefreeness as the source of a fulfilling romantic relationship is, of course, La non-demande de mariage, the non-proposal of marriage. To be an eternal fiancé to the lady of my thoughts, always I think I have the honor of not asking for your hand. Let us not engrave our names at the bottom of a parchment. However, there are marriages in Brassens songs, but when they take place, they come to consecrate a relationship which has managed to preserve its carefree nature for a long time, despite all of the headwinds. In Marche Nuptiale, Wedding March, Brassens imagines that he's witnessing the marriage of his own parents. Even if I lived until the end of time, I will always keep the happy memory of the day of my father and my mother's poor marriage, when they went for the wedlock before his worship the mayor. It was on a cart for oxen, to be quite frank, pulled by friends, pushed by relatives, that the old lovers had their spousal after a long time of love, a long time of engagement. And in this song, all the elements of nature are unleashed against the bride and groom. The wind blows so hard that his father's hat flies away. It makes the choir's children fall. The rain falls when it drops well, as if to prevent the wedding, whatever the cost. And yet the wedding continues and the marriage finally takes place. The conditions in which these unusual weddings take place are like a symbolic summary of all the crises that the couple who love each other can go through. These crises are compared here to natural elements, the wind, the rain, the storm. When love has resisted all these obstacles, then marriage becomes truly sacred. And contrary to what Brassens sang when he was younger, there exists a happy love. Happy love till death do us part, as they say. Death. Here it is, the main protagonist of George Brassens' songs. Pauvre Martin, poor Martin, Le Testament, the Testament, Grand-père, grandfather, Bonhomme, the old man, Le Funérel d'Antan, old times funeral, La Ballade de Cimetière, the Ballad of Cemeteries, Trompe la Mort, deceiving death. But the most beautiful of all is called Uncle Archibald, Uncle Archibald. Boris Vian thought that Uncle Archibald was Brassens' masterpiece. Georges Brassens himself, in several interviews, suggested Uncle Archibald is perhaps the song of which he is most proud. According to Dominique Chalet, Georges Brassens portrays himself in this character of Uncle Archibald, whom the song describes as a good guy, good-natured and generous, who pays the bills, knowing poorly how to defend himself against hypocrites of all kinds. One day, Archibald meets a prostitute in the street who tries to seduce him. This prostitute actually is Death. When Archibald rejects her, Death takes offense and mows him down by surprise. A monologue then follows in which Death manages to convince Uncle Archibald that he has everything to gain from following her. If you lie down in my arms, then life will seem easier to you. You will be out of reach of dogs, wolves, men, and fools. Finally, Uncle Archibald allows himself to be convinced by Death, and the song ends with the following verse. And my uncle followed in the footstep of the beauty who did not seem so fierce, and there they were, arm in arm. Here they are gone, I don't know where, to have their wedding. These are very strange words. That is a prostitute who sleeps with everyone. It's a classic image, but normally you don't marry a prostitute. However, what is most surprising at the end of the song is that Uncle Archibald ends up saying yes to Death and agrees to go with her on their honeymoon. Saying yes to Death is the most salient paradox in the philosophy of Georges Brassens. But what does it mean to say yes to Death? And indeed, it does not mean loving Death at all, and that is why Death is represented in the guise of the prostitute. Generally, we don't like prostitutes, and we don't like Death either. But saying yes to natural death means, above all, saying no to unnatural death. Unnatural death is going to die in war, or dying for ideas, or dying for the nation, or dying for the revolution, or for this or that great cause. This is the death of heroes or of those who don't really like life for what it is. On the contrary, little guys like Uncle Archibald don't care about being heroes. They sincerely want to live and love living as simple mortals, and they end up simply saying yes to natural death when it happens naturally, simply because they said yes to life.